this is the Angry GM, and I am here with a late proofread aloud. Actually, the proofread aloud is not late. The article itself is late, and because it is impossible to do a proofread aloud before the article is finished being written, then the proofread aloud is also necessarily late, but it's no later than the article demands it be. Also, this is like my third attempt at recording and my fifth attempt at writing this article. This article has been a nightmare all around, and I really, really hope you like it nonetheless. It is entitled Dealing with Problematic Actions, and I just realized I left out the introduction that says this is part of the True Game Mastery series, so I'm going to pause and swipe that from another article. Just hold on a moment. Okay, I am back after a little bit of background editing and ready to actually proofread the article, Dealing with Problematic Actions. This here is a part of my year-long course in True Game Mastery. You don't have to read the lessons in order, but that's how they work best. So, if you're new here, check out the series index and start at the beginning. And then there's a link, click here, for the True Game Mastery series index. And now, on with the real article. Today's very special episode of True Game Mastery deals with a difficult and emotional topic. A topic that starts fights and splits friendships. A topic that has been unraveling the very fabric of the online gaming community for years. What do you do when your player declares a problematic action? Don't worry, I haven't gone woke. This ain't a bunch of toxic inclusivity bullshit. Angry don't do that crap. I'm talking about truly problematic actions. Actions that, for one reason or another, are just really hard to adjudicate. Heading, dealing with problem actions. That should be dealing with problematic actions, because I'm just repeating the title again. Okay. Dealing with problematic actions. Action adjudication's mostly a straightforward thing. Players declare actions, and you determine and describe the outcome. I taught you that shit 2 lessons ago. But sometimes, it ain't that simple. Some kinds of game actions give game masters, even true game masters, fits. Sometimes it's because it ain't clear what the character's actually doing, or if they're doing anything at all. Sometimes it's because describing the outcome demands a certain level of pedantical pickiness that just don't come naturally. And sometimes it's because the actions don't seem to need any game mechanics at all. But they do. What kinds of actions are these? Really common ones, it turns out. Because the list includes such things as recognizing, recalling, examining, intuiting, spotting, searching, skulking, sneaking, speaking, schmoozing, sensing, and sympathizing. Just to name a few. My voice cracked. That was sympathizing. Let me give that another read. What kinds of actions are these? Really common ones, it turns out. Because the list includes such things as recognizing, recalling, examining, intuiting, spotting, searching, skulking, sneaking, speaking, schmoozing, sensing, and sympathizing, just to name a few. That's a broad list, ain't it? And it doesn't seem like those actions have much in common with each other, except for the fact that game masters keep screwing them up and asking me how to handle them better. But there is a common thread between them. 3 common threads, actually. 3 core principles that true game masters employ to handle such actions without missing a beat, while mere game executors are stuck beep-booping their way through the pre-programmed code in their core rulebooks. Today, I'm going to teach you those principles, the 3 laws of game mastering non-robotics. And because the laws are a little tough to master, I'm going to use those problematic actions to help illustrate them. And to make life easier for everyone, especially me, I'm lazy, I've divided them into 5 broad action classifications. So I'll be explaining how the 3 laws apply to thinky-facty actions, spotty-searchy actions, I inserted the word type into here. like, but I don't like it, so I'm fixing that, and then we're going. Okay. So I'll be explaining how the three laws apply to thinky, facty actions, spotty, searchy actions, sneaky, skulky actions, speaky, schmoozy actions, and feely, sensey actions. Cool? Great. Just one thing before I start. Focus on the principles, forget the examples. As part of this lesson, I'm going to briefly tell you how true game masters use the principles of true game mastery to deal with some actions that have probably been screwing you up at your table. Despite that, I don't want you to focus on those specifics. Not today. Focus your energy on the three laws of game mastering non-robotics. Write them down, learn them, live them, and love them. They're way more important and empowering than learning specific processes. Besides, I'm coming back to all those topics very soon. See, the next big unit in the True Game Mastery series, which this lesson is actually laying the groundwork for, involves running all kinds of encounters. So I'll definitely be diving deep into things like perception, social interaction, and stealth in the coming weeks. But before we move on, a sidebar, which I like to call actions ain't skills. You might have noticed the action types I listed are really just cutesy names for common tabletop role-playing game skills. Perception, stealth, diplomacy, sense motive, whatever. And you'd be wrong. I used cutesy non-skill names for a reason. And the reason is, I ain't talking about skills today. Modern role-playing game systems have screwed the action adjudication pooch bad by conflating actions with skills, while they've also been consolidating their skill lists down to a handful of broad, shallow skills. It's bad for them, and it's bad for you. Skills are game mechanical tools used to resolve actions. When a player says, "Ardric hides behind the curtain," or "Cabe checks the chest for traps," or "Danae pleads with the magistrate for mercy," those are actions, and they're what I'm talking about. Skills are just modifiers you add to die rolls, mostly. Some of the stuff in today's lesson will contradict the specific skill descriptions in your role-playing game system du jour. What do you do when that happens? Well, a true game master would know the answer. And it sure as hell ain't flawlessly execute the game's code. Now back to the article. The three laws of game mastering non-robotics. When a true game master is faced with a problematic actions, three principles see them through. And they are, one, automatic responses aren't actions. Two, players choose, characters act. And three, true game masters speak only facts. Automatic responses aren't actions. Actions are deliberate choices players make on behalf of their characters. If something ain't a deliberate choice, it ain't an action. It's that simple. True game masters distinguish between actions and things like automatic responses, reflexes, and autonomous events. How can you tell the difference? First, actions are interactive. If a character's not acting on something in the world, they're not taking an action. Second, actions are external. Anything that's happening only inside a character's head ain't an action. Third, actions are visible. If a character's not doing something that would be clear and obvious on a movie screen, they ain't taking an action. True game masters neither require nor allow players to declare anything that isn't an action. Anything automatic happens automatically. Players choose, characters act. Players choose actions on behalf of their characters. They choose their characters' intentions and approaches and decide what tools, resources, and information their characters use to make manifest their intentions in the world. Characters execute those actions. They do the things, they use the tools, they speak the words, and so on. And when the outcome's uncertain, it's the character's capabilities at issue, not the players. René Descartes once posited that every person had a little spirit living in their pineal gland, pulling levers, pushing buttons, and driving their brain. Yeah, that was a mess of a read, huh? René Descartes once posited that every person had a little spirit living in their pineal glands, pulling levers, pushing buttons, and driving their brain. That's how it be. Players are the characters' reason and will, and nothing else. Every player is trapped in a little room inside their character's brain. Even the words they speak are just ideas until the characters blurt them out. True game masters speak only facts. True game masters tell players what their characters see, hear, perceive, and know. And nothing else. They don't tell players what their characters deduce, believe, feel, or conjecture. I know that seems simple, but as you'll see below, it really ain't. It's a very finicky principle that's tough to master. A lot of things that look like facts are, in reality, deductions, and it's vital you know the difference. Some of you might think there are exceptions concerning specialized knowledge available to expert inhabitants of fantasy worlds. There ain't. You're wrong. Again, this will be clearer below and in future lessons, but it's going to take a lot of practice to get this right. Also note this ain't an admonition against lying. Characters can perceive things that ain't really there, like illusions or hallucinations, and characters can learn incorrect facts. But this law does keep you from having to lie quite so much when players flub certain checks. To help make this law, and all the laws and some lingering issues from the Declare, Determine, Describe cycle clear, I'm going to analyze five different broad kinds of actions in those terms. But first, I'm going to have a little sidebar which is called Don't Play the Game for the Players. I often talk about how real human brains work in my articles, and I've taught myself a lot about how brains work because game design is about two-thirds psychology. But I'm going to put that crap aside and speak purely about game design now. Why is it so important that players choose and characters act? Why shouldn't you tell your players what their characters deduce or conclude or believe? Games need challenges, or else they're not games. But tabletop role-playing games can only provide mental challenges, because trying to roll a 15 on a 20-sided die is not a challenge. RPGs can't test balance, coordination, reaction time, execution, muscle memory, or anything else that other games can. Role-playing games can only challenge players in terms of strategy, problem-solving, and deduction. If you don't let the players handle that crap, then your role-playing game isn't a game at all, it's a luck-based activity. And that's why you can't allow your players to play characters smarter than themselves, because smarts is the only thing these games can test. Thinky, facty actions, or non-actions. Thinky facty actions are attempts by characters to recall relevant information about the things they encounter. They're attempts to know things, and they're bullshit. Thinky facty actions aren't actions. I don't give a crap what the rules of your game of choice say. I don't care how you think human brains work. They're wrong, you're wrong. These ain't actions, and no true game master mistakes them for such. When characters encounter something about which they might know something, monsters they might recognize, symbols whose meaning they might recall, text in languages they might be able to translate, true game masters determine what the characters know and tell the players, immediately, when they set the scene. That's a game master's job, to tell the players what their characters see, hear, perceive, and know. When a player asks a true game master whether their character recognizes a thing or knows anything else about a thing, true game masters always confidently and truthfully respond by saying, "I already told you everything your character knows. I always do." Build your players' trust and reassure them such knowledge is automatic by telling them how their characters know what they know when you tell them their characters know it. You see a strange cat-like predator with six legs and tentacles. Because she studied the foundational arcane texts, Beryllia recognizes it as a Soerl, a cunning predator that feeds on potassium and warps perceptions by emitting sonic vibrations. Sidebar: gathering intelligence. In modern role-playing games, characters either know things or they don't, and players rarely take active steps to find the information they don't already know. Why? Because modern players live in a world where information is just a tap of the fingers away. They have no idea how medieval fantasy characters might glean information. And D&D and its cousins are really crappy about describing the possibilities in their worlds. So it never occurs to players that they might study, consult, experiment, divine, rumor-monger, reconnoiter, or assay the information they need. Nor does it occur to most game masters. Worse still, the tabletop role-playing games that do decide to incorporate such possibilities skip over describing them and go full bore into hard-coding them as buttons players can just push. Players and game masters need to know how to hunt for information, not how to roll to find it. Spotty, searchy actions and non-actions. Spotty, searchy actions are how sensory information gets from the character's world into the player's noggins. And it won't surprise you, now, to learn most such actions aren't actions at all. They're as automatic as recognition and recall. At least they should be. True game masters, therefore, recognize when characters might become aware of things, especially non-obvious concealed or hidden things, determine whether the characters actually do become aware of such things, and describe them accordingly. True game masters make sure players know everything their characters can perceive merely by looking around or approaching something. To uncover things they can't perceive, true game masters require characters to take action. Characters must interact with the environment to search it. They can't just look around really hard. They have to move around, poke, prod, look around and under things, move things aside, and brush off the dust and dirt. Remember what your mother told you when you couldn't see the ketchup in the fridge. You've got to move stuff around. The interaction's important for two reasons. First, characters might blunder into traps they're looking for. And second, hidden ambushers might see searching characters coming and attack, or cut and run. When characters interact with the world can respond. But the big thing true game masters have to learn is how to describe the signs of a thing instead of describing the thing itself. True game masters players never spot traps or secret doors or hidden goblins or stalking Soerls. Instead, they spot raised tiles or nearly invisible seams in the brickwork or the toes of hobnailed boots peeking out beneath tapestries. Or they hear rustlings in the underbrush, and that's all they spot or hear. This will be a big point when I teach you how to start encounters right. Need some practice at this? Grab a published module, open to a random encounter description, read it carefully, and figure out what signs of things the characters might notice if they make all the spot checks. What clues might they perceive from which they can deduce the presence of a hidden trap or monster in ambush? And do remember that all spotty, searchy actions are ruined if the players see their die rolls. True Game Masters players never roll their own perception checks. Ever. Sneaky, skulky actions. Sneaky, skulky actions are actions characters take to conceal the signs of their presence. assuming their presence isn't already immediately obvious to everyone. And in modern tabletop role-playing games, they're a giant-ass mess thanks to this bullshit engage the cloaking device on and off approach to stealth that's been hard-coded into every last one of them. I promise I'll teach you later how true game masters handle stealth encounters and infiltration scenes. Later. Okay, I said later twice in that sentence, so we'll fix that by saying it only once. Right now, though, the only reason I'm even mentioning these actions is that they go hand in glove with spotty, searchy actions, with each opposing the other. And because the two together... Right now, though, the only reason I'm even mentioning these actions is that they go hand in glove with spotty, searchy actions, with each opposing the other, and because the two together can actually show you just how powerful my three laws of game mastering non-robotics can be when properly applied. This is why true game masters don't need any help or special mechanical rules to run engaging stealth encounters. Oops. Imagine this setup. Cabe is ransacking the goblin's storeroom. He's trying to be quiet about it, but there's a goblin guard up the hall. The GM makes a listen-type check and determines the goblin hears a noise, or thinks he does. He moves quietly up the hall, so the GM makes a sneak-type check, and then tells Cabe's player that Cabe hears a scuffing of booted feet on the stone floor of the hall outside. What does Cabe do? Cabe's player remembers the GM mentioning a tapestry. I'll hide behind the tapestry and close my hooded lantern. The GM makes a hide-type check as the goblin enters. The goblin peers around the room, his eyes alight on the open chest you were rooting through, and he prowls over to it. That should be Cabe was rooting through, because I always speak about characters. Have to follow my own style guide, don't I? Yeah. The goblin peers around the room, his eyes alight on the open chest Cabe was rooting through, and he prowls over to it, then starts casting about the room. What does Cabe do? Cabe stays hidden, but palms his dagger. Check. Did the goblin hear a noise? He's moving toward the tapestry. Cabe leaps out and tries to stab the goblin in the throat before he can scream. I've got a cat in my mouth. That was supposed to be a cat trying to get out of my mouth. That simple cat-and-mouse stealth encounter arises just from a true game master properly adjudicating one action at a time. Speaky schmoozy-type actions, or interactions. I think, first of all, I got to remove the word type, and then I can drop... I never did actually discuss interaction as a concept, so we're going to drop that from the heading. But I'm also going to drop the word type and add a comma. So, speaky schmoozy actions. Speaky schmoozy actions are actions in which the character uses words, supplemented occasionally by bribes, gifts, payments, and incriminating pieces of evidence, to sway a creature's actions or demeanor. And they are an endless source of debates among mere game executors. And I'm going to settle three of those debates here and now. First, speaky actions can't change a player character's mind about anything. That'd require you to tell a player what their character deduces, believes, or feels, and that's against the law. Second, it doesn't matter whether players speak as their characters or just describe their character's social actions. Players don't speak through their character's mouths anyway, they just put ideas in their character's heads. Which is why, third, it doesn't matter how a player describes a social action, the outcome's down to the character's social aptitude and skills and whatnot. True game masters know that however good a player's performance, however inspiring their speech, that's just what the character thinks they sound like in their own head. What actually issues from the character's mouth is a different story. Don't like that explanation? Duff! That's how it be! Should you modify the character's odds of success based on what the player says? Yes, and no. Yes, You should take into account the relevance of the arguments made, the evidence cited, the leverage used, and the emotions appealed to. No, you should not take into account the eloquence, passion, or poetic turn of phrase. If it helps, imagine the character is stuck translating the player's words from English to common or whatever. Passion, eloquence, word choice, and witty puns get lost in translation, leaving only the semantical content intact. And then it's down to the character to add their own passion, eloquence, word choice, and wit. And remember that, like it or not, humans respond more to how things are said than what things are said. Sad, but true. Look at me. I get everything absolutely right, and I form brilliant, compelling arguments. And yet people still argue with me. Clearly, persuasion isn't about being right. Obviously, expect more about social encounters in the coming weeks. Feely-sensy actions and non-actions. Ah, crap, I hit the show me the website's code thing. Okay. Feely-sensy actions are to speaky-schmoozy type... yeah, I keep using the word type. Actually, I switch back and forth, which is the problem. But now that I'm saying it out loud, I don't like referring to them as feely-sensy type actions instead of feely-sensy actions. So, feely-sensy actions are to speaky-schmoozy actions what spotty-searchy actions are to sneaky-skulky actions. And I shouldn't have to explain further, but I probably do. These are the people-reading actions. Actions characters take when they want to understand what the hell is happening in some other creature's head. And just as modern role-playing games have ruined sneaky, skulky actions with crappily designed game mechanics, so too have they ruined feely-sensy actions. These days, intuition is either a very powerful but very narrow form of lie detection, or a kind of mind-reading that These days, intuition is either a very powerful but very narrow form of lie detection, or a kind of mental... this sentence is killing me. These days, intuition is either a very powerful but very narrow form of lie detection, and I'm realizing now that very narrow needs to be in hyphens... or M dashes. These days, intuition is either a very powerful, but very narrow, form of lie detection, or a kind of mind reading that borders on psychic empathy. Both approaches break some or all of the laws. Either you're making deductions for the players, or you're telling them what their characters must believe, or both. It ain't great. What's a true game master to do? I won't go into too many specifics here, stay tuned for a lesson in social encounters, but I'll say Paul Ekman's seminal work on deception, Telling Lies, and the old Fox television series based on his work, Lie to Me, provide an excellent model for social interaction and social detection in tabletop role-playing games. And it's pretty much the model most true game masters stumble on eventually. It's like this. Intuitive people are skilled at spotting emotional leakage. That's when someone's emotional state slips out in their tone, expression, and body language. And when a subject leaks an emotional state that's incongruous with their words or actions, there's cause for suspicion. Thus, when a state official smiles and offers a friendly handshake, an intuitive character might spot concealed anger. And when a merchant gives his sales pitch, an intuitive character might notice signs of a hidden fear or shame. And when a long-lost friend invites a character to follow them into the deep, dark forest, an intuitive character might recognize a totally bland or neutral emotional state. It's down to the player, not the character, to deduce that the official has an ulterior motive, that the merchant is being blackmailed into pulling a scam, or that the long-lost friend is actually a demonic spider from Deep Nest in magical guise. Again, though, I'll come back to this in more detail later. Social interaction systems in tabletop role-playing games just suck, and true game masters are stuck spackling over a lot of holes. And now a sidebar to further explain the suckage, which I call social actions and poor social skills. Social interaction systems in tabletop role-playing games suck, but it's not really the fault of the designers. At least, not completely. The real problem is that most people aren't social experts, and few people even recognize that inspiring orators, skilled dialecticians, profitable negotiators, and successful con artists are as much masters of a specialized skill set as doctors, scientists, locksmiths, martial artists, and ordained ministers. But we all think we're at least decent social interactors because we interact socially all the time. So, game designers don't know what people don't know, and game masters don't know what holes to fill, and players don't even know what's possible. This is why you end up with weird, stilted rules that sort of describe the absolutely vital social skill of building rapport, but don't provide enough context for players to actually use it. Want an example of a hole? You probably spotted it yourself. When I said, intuition is like spotting for social traps, did you find yourself wondering, so then, is there something like searching players can actively do when they suspect deception? Yes, there is. And that's the kind of thing a good social interaction system should tell you. And no, this is still not an argument for any sort of social combat bullshit. Such systems make games worse, not better. Anyway, back to the content with the final heading, Eyes on the Prize. Don't get so hung up on all this talk of stealth and perception and social detection that you lose sight of what's important, especially given that those topics will return in future lessons. For now, focus on learning the underlying principles themselves. Write them down and keep them close, and start practicing them right now. Remember that automatic responses aren't actions. Don't make players ask for things that should happen automatically. Handle them automatically and make sure your players know you're doing so. And if a player wants to make something happen, force them to interact with the world in an obvious and visible way. Remember that players choose while characters act. Action declarations, even when they amount to speaking in character, are just ideas in a character's head. The character's got to take the action or speak the words, and it's that character's skills and abilities that matter. Finally, remember that true game masters speak only facts. Never tell the players what they deduce, feel, or believe. Distinguish between the signs of a thing and the thing itself. Tell the players the signs their characters see and let them deduce the thing from the signs. And this has been the Proof Read Aloud, which is now done, and I will be back in a few days with another Proof Read Aloud about actually starting encounters off right, because we are moving into the encounter description, or the encounter running portion of the lesson, or of the course. And since I have now completely lost my ability to talk, this is a good place to stop.